From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 4th weekend, 2020. Here's a July 4th nugget. Wisconsin is the eighth most patriotic state in the land. And for what it's worth, New Jersey is dead last. The study probably didn't count the Springsteen fans. Okay, here's your gardening tip of the day. The Guinness Brewery in Dublin, Ireland, has been using hundreds of thousands of unused kegs of beer to fertilize their Christmas trees. They've been repurposing, their words, not mine, but repurposing their beer ever since the pandemic. But that's not how we recycle beer here in Milwaukee. It usually involves tailgating at a porta potty. Our question of the day is, what's wrong with people? The city of Philadelphia is asking people to refrain from swimming in dumpsters. Yep, you heard that correctly. A block party trash bin was turned into a makeshift swimming pool, and now they have to ask people to not do that. What's wrong with people? And finally, a Colorado State University study found that men who like cats are far less likely to get an online date. It's already too easy to reject people. Just swipe right. So guys, to increase your odds, keep the kitties out of the shot. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week. Market jumped 580 points on Monday, up 217 points Tuesday. A little bit of profit taken on Wednesday, slipped 77 points and made all that back plus some, rising 93 points today. Week overall, NASDAQ up 4.6%, tacking on 450 points to close at 10,208. S&P 500 up 4% this week, rising 121 points to close at 3130. Dow Jones Industrial Average added a whopping 813 points this week, climbing 3.2%. Close to the bell this afternoon in New York, finishing the holiday shortened week, 25,828. Year-to-date, NASDAQ's up 14.3%, banking tech stocks, S&P down just 2.2%, and the Dow, thanks to Boeing, down 8.4%. You know, Kyle, it's pretty hard to get excited about the Dow having its best quarter that ended Wednesday since 1987. On the heels of what happened in the first quarter, but pretty good rebound nevertheless. Markets rebounded starting late in March, traded sideways for a fair amount of June, as you know. It's interesting to see, Kyle, that some of the economic indicators, particularly consumption numbers, are starting to level off. People were discussing all spring, is this recovery going to look like a V? Is it going to look like a W? Will it look like a U? D's kind of out of the question right now. We expected some of that with states reopening and a little bit of economic boost there. But now with the infections really jumping up 87% the last 2 weeks, the consumption and spending is leveling off, even dropping off somewhat. Kyle, we're all aware of the fact that economic recovery is not a straight line. Recoveries are seldom that way. But it does appear that things are leveling up just a tad as we enter into July.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think some encouraging economic news this week. And clearly, as we look at the path forward, I think what we're realizing about the economy is that it's not strictly a function of when the U.S. recovers, but it's more geographic specific. And so we're seeing that in employment data, where regionally the employment data looks different. We're seeing it in, the spending patterns, where if your state is more open than another, potentially you have more places to spend money. And so I think, you know, what we're finding out is that, you know, the expectation of a V shape or a swish shape or a W shape recovery, that's going to vary depending on what region you're in. It's going to vary depending even on what country you're in at this point, because I think what we've seen is that this virus has been controlled to different extents in different places. And so Ultimately, I think the expectations of, any one place looking like it looks everywhere else are maybe a bit unfounded right now. And I think what we need to really focus on is the fact that some places are going to look better than others.
But Kyle, apart from geographic differences, which I acknowledge, in aggregate, what you're seeing is an economy for the entire country that has leveled off the last couple of weeks. Hard to make a trend out of just a couple of weeks, but it's consistent with, the huge increase in infections, and even some states are shutting down. So, yeah, you're right. Some states that shut down early are reopening more successfully and vice versa. But net-net, I think what you see in the United States is no longer this V-shaped recovery, and it's starting to level off. Something we got to keep our eyes on. Kyle, I want to talk about PE ratios here for a minute. So most investors listening to the program know that stocks are sold for multiples of their earnings. There are a couple of ways to look at that. You can look back 12 months. Advantage of that is you're dealing with real numbers. You know exactly what the numbers are. And so it's not all that hard to ascertain what the trailing PE ratio is on the market. Forward PEs, of course, are just that. They're looking to the future. Their estimates. A good part of that is you're trying to figure out what the life's going to look like. Yesterday has passed, right? So the disadvantage of a forward PE, and here's my point, is that it's arbitrarily cut off after 12 months from now. So when you have an economy where you have a recovery that's spotty, you have potentially no longer a V-shaped recovery here in the United States, starting to level off. A lot of the pros try to focus on earnings out multiple years into the future. Because the problem is, if the economy is in fact experiencing recovery, by just arbitrarily chopping off the PE at 12 months from now, doesn't take into account the extension of the recovery moving forward. So, having said all that, forward PE on the market is 21.8. We can deal with trailing PEs by looking at cyclically adjusted price earnings ratios, of course, made well known by Jeremy Siegel. But there's no similar comparison for forward PEs. So the point is, take forward PEs with a grain of salt at this point in the market cycle. I'm not telling you to ignore them, but they're really not all that helpful as the economy emerges from recession and grapples with the virus.
Such an interesting point, Bob, and you look at one of the most common measures of forward price to earnings ratio, which is the next four quarters of earnings. And magically, in the change of calendar from June 30th to July 1st, now you're putting another quarter of data into that forward four-quarter earnings number. And it overnight basically made the forward P of the market go from 24 to 22. So just from that one night of changing the forward four-quarter look, you essentially have made the market significantly cheaper. And so I think, if all you're doing is looking at what do the next four quarters look like, you really miss the bigger picture of what's the direction for earnings long-term. And I think that's what investors care about. It's why we were able to rally in the second quarter the way we were. I think investors have started to believe that, the government has this under control, maybe not short-term, but long-term, there are some expectations that we can get back to an economy that's growing, back to an earnings picture that's growing. And so, you're absolutely right to point out that, it's a little bit short-sighted to only look at the next 12 months or, again, in the case of, kind of the most common measure, the next four quarters, because ultimately you miss a big part of the picture.
And related to this, if you take a look at the market right now, you get an idea of the discount off of where we were in February. So the Dow closed today, as I mentioned, 25,820, just below 26,000. Market peak just north of 29,000. So give or take, we're down about 3,500 points. And where I'm going with this is, every day of my life, people ask me about the market and they're wondering where it's going to be tomorrow, next week, next year. And I've been doing this professionally now for 45 years, so I've figured out over the years a number of different ways to answer those same questions. And you know, the point I'm trying to make to you is the market, in my opinion, is an amazing pricing mechanism because there's so many millions of participants. In aggregate, it's fairly accurately reflecting what they think the economy and the markets are going to be looking like over the next couple of years. So the point is, if you look at the market trading for 3,500 points less, well, pick a number, it's about 12.5% off its highs, and the market's saying, in so many words, that you know earnings are going to be down in aggregate 12-13% for a couple of years until we maintain some forward momentum. And the exact point I'm trying to get at here is, you know, the markets have digested so much of the virus that's anticipating the recovery. And at just under 26,000, I think the market's about where it should be, considering all of the knowns that are out there.
Well, and I think you add in the fact that investors tend to reflect news pretty quickly once it's known. And so, you know, I think oftentimes the expectation for what's going to happen is a bigger driver than actually knowing what's going to happen or actually seeing, you know, what has happened. And so, you know, I think you look at the economic data this week and some of the leading indicators that would suggest the direction we're headed. I think we're far more important to investors than, you know, anything that told us what did happen. And so, you know, I think you're spot on that it's not simply about, you know, again, what do the next 12 months look like? It's not simply about, you know, where have we been? Where are we headed? But, you know, realistically, you know, we are fairly priced for the expectations going forward.
Joel, let's bring you into the show. Labor Department reported this morning unemployment rate fell to 11.1%. You point out could be a full percentage point higher because of some unreliable data. 31 million people still unemployed and getting some kind of pandemic relief. That's up from just 1.6 million a year ago. Good news is almost 5 million new jobs were created in the United States last month. Joel, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure, yeah. It was 4.8 million jobs that employers added last month, and that's a record, you know, since 1948 of the records that we have. That's the most added in a month, but it's still, 14.7 million behind the peak number of jobs that we had in February. So, you know, a lot of the numbers that we saw on different fronts this week were showing that we continue to make progress, but that we're still, you know, digging out of a hole that we were in, you know, right after the shelter-in-place actions went into effect in March. The unemployment rate improved from 13.3% in May to 11.1%, and that's a pretty good jump for 1 month. That's remarkable. And it was 14.7% in April. Before the pandemic, the highest unemployment rate on record was 10.8%, and that was back in the recession in 1982. So even though we're down to 11.1%, again, it's progress, but it's showing that we, you know, we're still in a tenuous position.
As you know, the Institute for Supply Management came out with their manufacturing number, biggest increase in almost 40 years.
Yes, that's real encouraging. It's good to see that manufacturing number go up because it reflects more of the global situation. So, you know, we know that the pandemic has you know, choked off a lot of demand for manufactured goods around the world and messed up supply chains. Well, that number from the Institute for Supply Management tells us that for the first time in 4 months, that manufacturers, that their purchasing managers are actually, they're seeing their industry expand. They're seeing growth there. So that's a really good sign.
Kyle, let's look at stock market performance around the world for the first 6 months. Considering how many infections we have here in the United States, and the fact that we lag much of the developed world in our response to the virus. Pretty interesting to see the U.S. stocks held up better than almost anywhere else on Earth for 6 months. U.S. stock down 3.1%. EFA index ex-U.S. down almost 11%. EFA's down 11%. Europe down 9%. Emerging world down 9%. So, you know, triple the decline that we see here in the United States. Of course, a lot of this is because of the strength of the dollar. The returns I'm quoting are in dollar terms, of course, for U.S. investors. But the point and the question that I have is, you know, at some point in time, when the valuations get a little bit more attractive, I think international investing is going to be pretty attractive.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think there's really two things worth pointing out when you look at the first half of the year. The first is, as you say, that disparity between U.S. returns and returns around the rest of the world. Some of that is certainly because of the strength of the dollar. Some of that is because of kind of the dollar's safe haven status. But I think that the other piece of this is that U.S. markets have largely been driven by technology and consumer discretionary stocks. And I think that speaks to the strength of the U.S. consumer and the importance of the U.S. consumer, not just here, but globally as well. And so, you know, as you look at some of that return disparity, understand that much of what's been happening has been happening in information technology and consumer stocks. And then as you look at the path forward, you know, I think we're talking about the U.S. right now being in a place, at least relative to the virus, that's significantly behind many other developed countries and even significantly behind many other of the developing countries. And so, you know, I think we have some more work to do on the virus front before we can catch up. That may mean that returns outside the U.S. can look a little bit better as those countries are able to participate a little more, those people are able to participate a little more in their economies. But then I think the other thing worth pointing out is that the benefits that we've gotten from technology stocks, from consumer stocks, have also made those stocks a little bit expensive, that the rewards that we've received from some of the less leveraged companies being those technology names, those are companies that tend to benefit in this types of environment that we've seen. But as we re-enter an environment of economic growth, that tends to reward more leveraged, more cyclical businesses. And that's where some of the rest of the world can tend to shine. And so, you know, I think I remain cautious about how much we want to put in portfolios overseas, but I do think there's some meaningful opportunities, especially as investors, we look beyond just the next 6 months or a year, and we really look to the role that those pieces should play, which is 5, 10, 15 years down the road.
Kyle, you and I both follow the J.P. Morgan Chase relative valuation studies that come out every 90 days. It's interesting to see in the results that were published this morning that the value versus growth relative valuation favors value by less than 1%. And what's also interesting is, the PE for value is still 132% above its 20-year average. And it's, you know, value's been out of favor for so long, and yet it's still expensive. I think a lot of that has to do with the energy's earnings are down 105% year over year, consumer discretionary down 57%. And then you take a look at the growth stock, to your point, growth stocks are now selling for 158% of their 20-year average PE. You know, the way you interpret that, it's got to have the same conclusion, which is a little expensive.
Yeah, and I think the other challenge, of course, is that there's a difference between some of the most expensive growth stocks and some of those growth stocks are a little bit cheaper. And so when you look at some of the biggest pieces of the growth index, when you look at some of the biggest technology names, some of the biggest consumer names that are out there that make up those growth index, those are the ones that have really led the way this year. They're the things that have held the market up as well as it's held up. And so, you know, I think the challenge is there are still some cheap growth stocks out there. There are still some opportunities to capture earnings growth, but you're not going to necessarily see it strictly in the indexes because of how much those capitalizations to impact the weighting of those stocks. And so, you know, as you look at the growth index, I urge some caution on valuations, but that doesn't mean that you want to abandon growth. It just means that maybe you need to be a little more nuanced in your approach.
And finally, Kyle, let's talk about bonds here for a minute. Striking how very flat the yield curve is. You look at the 5-year treasury, less than 0.33%, 10-year treasury, 0.33%, 30-year, just 1.4%. Sure don't get paid a whole lot of money by extending durations on the bonds these days.
Yeah, and the other thing you're not really not getting paid for anymore is taking credit risk. And so, you know, the question is always how you position the safest piece of your portfolio, or what's supposed to be the safest piece of your portfolio, in an environment in which you're not getting paid to take any of the typical risks you take in a bond portfolio. When you get paid to take credit risk, you take credit risk. When you get paid to take duration risk, you take duration risk. And so, you know, for investors looking for what do we do with bonds, I think the answer is you avoid going too long in terms of bond maturities, and you certainly avoid taking risk in that bond portfolio in the form of credit, because, you know, I think as we've seen, this is not nearly the end of this economic crisis. It's not nearly the end of this pandemic. There's plenty of volatility still to be had. And so rates could move lower. You'd benefit if you were longer in duration. But at the other side of that, you know, there's not that much room left before you get to zero on rates nearly across the board. And so I think if you're talking about risk versus reward in bonds, the rewards aren't all that great and the risk is pretty significant. And so I think it just speaks volumes to why you want to stay in that short to intermediate space, why you want to stay in the highest quality bonds you can. And Bob, I know that's something that you've been talking to clients about for a long time, is the importance of safety for the safe piece of your portfolio.
Well, everybody, this Saturday, 244th birthday of the United States of America. So as we spend our time this weekend celebrating July 4th, celebrating the birthday of the country, I think it's important to remind ourselves why it is such a great place to live. You know, we're this wonderful blend of democracy and capitalism. With democracy, we, of course, have freedom and the ability to build a middle class because of it. With capitalism, you have the marketplace deciding where capital goes. That's the advantage we have over other countries where the state controls capital. Let the marketplace do it. Ugly part of capitalism, of course, is creative destruction. Money will pour into more profitable areas and ruin their rates of return over time. And then money gets reallocated to a higher and better use. But that wonderful blend of capitalism and democracy, in my opinion, is what we need to celebrate, among other things, this Saturday. Well, happy 4th of July, everybody. Thanks for listening to Money Talk. We enjoy doing the program, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.